Numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. We don't care how you're taking us, and we just appreciate that you are any which way. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. It's a numbers game. What's happening, Kelly?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I am well.
Good.
Good show you've crafted with guests here, sir.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
JVT.
No, but really, how are you doing?
That's right. That's what we were talking about before the show. When someone asks you how you're doing, like, how do they really care? What if I just launched into a lengthy...
Like, Kelly, well, I'm glad you asked.
You know...
meeting with the bank yesterday and 8 minutes of that.
Been waiting for someone to ask me this very existential question of how I'm doing. And just go on for 3 minutes about it. JVT will join us momentarily, talk college football. He's got college football plays. I like what JVT's doing. He agrees with the whole... We don't know much about college football thing, and he's sticking with his bread and butter, the Mountain West. He's got college football plays coming up. Also some baseball from him. Will Hill from the Should Have Bet More podcast, talking all his baseball picks and beyond. Sian Najat on the Tour Championship. What is he doing? Is he betting 72 holes of golf? Is he betting the FedEx Cup? What's he doing? What's he doing here?
I love his betting card.
Okay.
I hope he wins a lot of money this week.
Let me guess, because you got the same stuff.
We have similar stuff.
Similar stuff. And then Jason Weingart from Under Cloud of Smoke. How many ways could Jason take a victory lap on Jackson Merrill?
Well, it ain't done yet.
No, it's not. But he's taking it all right, though.
Done or not done yet? Not done yet.
Yeah, not done yet, but we'll see. Looking pretty good for Merrill ticket holders these days. Let us begin with tennis. We'll get to some baseball here momentarily as well. Tennis yesterday, we had a very good day that could have been epic. We deserved better. We hit Jakub Mencik as the big dog yesterday. I want to say it was plus 264. Straight set winner over Felix Auger-Aliassime. That was nice. And then Tristan Schoolcate came back from a two sets to nothing deficit to win in five in his match. Another dog. And we were off to the races. But then we did lose one pretty cleanly. And then we were up a break. We lost on Lerner Tien pretty cleanly to Artur Fies. And then we had a walkover. Lepchenko was up a break. And then the Erika Andreeva, JVT's favorite tennis player, Erika Andreeva, she quit early. Some people with PPHs, by the way, with paper heads, got the money on that after three games of tennis. And then Evelise, this is what turned it in from just, you know, not epic into just very good. Evelise was up 4-2 in the third as a plus 193 play, I believe she was, plus 195, pardon me. She gacked it. So that wasn't fun. But anyway, a solid winning day nonetheless. Today there are three plays in the U.S. Open. Again, VSiN.com/picks. Every host on the network, every guest on the network, every sport, it's all up at VSiN.com/picks for subscribers. Three today, one on the lady side. This is the one that is at a different price. And again, I put these in overnight, late night West Coast time. Peyton Stearns, plus 119 over Daria Kasatkina was my play on the lady side last night. Peyton Stearns is right about now looking at her. She's plus 104. Yeah, that's on the edge. That's on the edge. Certainly don't play it out of plus money. But that's what it was last night. The other two are very playable. Tomas Martín Echeverri, I got it minus 126 over Francisco Cerúndolo, two clay court specialists. You can actually get a better price on Echeverri by some cents, about 5 cents here at this point. And then Gael Monfils, Kelly, plus 164 over Casper Ruud in a... big-time match on paper anyway today on the men's side. You can get Monfils at about plus 155. That is definitely still playable. So Stearns on the ladies' side, if you can still get plus money. And then Echeverri and Monfils on the men's side in what has already been, just through the first round, just electric at the U.S. Open. And you have
sounds great.
Oh, it's just fantastic. And you have some of the big-time players that have, you know, wobbled kind of in their first-round matches but still came out clean. On the ladies' side, Iga Świątek won in straight sets against Kamila Rakimova yesterday. But Rakimova just sort of gacked the second set. Yeah. She had three set points, and she just gave it away to Iga. So Iga gets by in straights.
I watched a fair amount of that one. I was a little worried for your girl there for a bit.
Oh, I wasn't. I mean, she was up a set. I wasn't worried for the match. She's not going to lose to Rakimova, but she is in her head way too much. She's definitely way into her head. She overthinks. And she even admitted she got tight. But then on the men's side, it was equally, interesting. Jannik Sinner, who, you know, on the Beating the Book U.S. Open preview podcast that I do with Drew, that I did with Drew Dinsick and with Zach Cohen, our own Zach Cohen, one of the first questions I asked was, do you think Sinner's mentally with the whole doping thing is going to be a little out of whack? And he was. He dropped the first set to Mackie McDonald before he righted the ship and won in four. And then did you see Carlitos last night? Carlitos Alcaraz?
Only the very beginning.
So he was playing an Australian by the name of Lee Tu.
Yeah.
Lee Tu. First name Lee, L-I, last name Tu, T-U.
Actually, as you're talking about this, I'm realizing this was on TV number two, and I caught way more bits and pieces of this than I remember, but yeah, sorry.
So Lee Tu is this player who quit playing tennis for 6 years, and he's still in his 20s, by the way. He stopped playing tennis for 6 years. He was like one of the two best junior Australian players. Him and Tanasi Kokkinakis were like one and two. And then he just sort of fell out of love with the sport. And so he just drifted off. He didn't play it for 6 years. And so, you know, by the way, Kyrgios was...
I was just going to say, did I catch Nick Kyrgios interviewing him at some point?
Well, Kyrgios was in the booth, and then he did the post-match interview.
But what's he doing?
Kyrgios was in the booth, and they were asking him, like, Chris Fowler and John McEnroe, like, do you think this guy even has a, you know, you think this is going to be a blowout, right? And Kyrgios is like, nair. yeah, they were like, what? You don't? And sure enough, this guy who had been out 6 years... took a set off Alcaraz, took the second set from him. It was just unbelievable to watch. And then they kept asking Kyrgios, Kyrgios is like, he's from Adelaide. Stranger things have happened. And they're like, really? Have they?
What is the Kyrgios update?
He's got this. He's got a podcast. He's like going to have a whole second career.
He was hurt, but we were expecting him back, right, by
this
point?
For a minute, we were.
Okay.
Yeah. To play in this tournament, there was always a possibility, but I guess not. But, you know, it's funny with Fowler, too, because they were trying to explain, when he said stranger things have happened, they both called him on it. They're like, really? Has it? And you could tell with Fowler, like, game recognized game, Chris Fowler. I hear you. Because he knew, he's like, even if he went down 2-1, Alcaraz would still be an in-match favorite. So, like, you can tell Fowler knows what he's talking about with odds. Unlike Brett Haber from Tennis Channel, who kind of just knows it theoretically. You can know Fowler's actually done this stuff. But anyway, Carlos wins in four. But it was just an incredible, absolutely incredible match also.
I thought Osaka looked good.
Osaka looked great.
Yeah.
Osaka and Sabalenka looked the best in the first round on the ladies' side, for sure. Sabalenka just pulverizing the ball.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's great. Baseball yesterday, there was as far as the 2024 Major League Baseball season is concerned, something happened yesterday which was 4 months in the making, which is the Cleveland Guardians have finally gotten caught at the top of the AL Central. The Royals did so by winning their third consecutive game against the Guardians. They swept a doubleheader 2 days ago against the Guards. Do I call them the Guards for short? And then they beat them yesterday. By the way, there's a fourth game in the series today, which will determine who is in the lead, obviously, in the AL Central after today, because they're tied right now. Three games ahead of the Twins, by the way, who have drifted off a little bit. But this is, you remember Samich and Matt Brown, the handle, when we did our little in-network VSiN futures betting competition in baseball. Samich had, Samich and Matt had Royals to win the AL Central. And he was like, I think we're going to change that. I was like, don't do it. I hope they didn't, because it looks pretty good. The Royals, who I have in the World Series against the Diamondbacks at 400-1. So I hope it happens. But the Royals today take on the Guardians for that rubber match. It's not even a rubber match. It's really to see if the Royals can sweep the series. And it's going to be Bybee against Waka is the matchup today to see who takes. By the way, Guardians minus 155 favorites in this. If we flash up, can we flash up the August? I guess it's a good opportunity to flash up the August current standings for those who have made a Major League Baseball bet in August. Eric Biggio from William Hill Caesars tweeted me yesterday. They're up for September. Who wants in?
Gil and I haven't talked about it once, but I'm gonna guess the answer is football's starting. We're good.
That's, you know what? I thought that was my initial reaction. I was like, okay, we've done it for five straight months. We finally had a bad one with the Mets. Probably won't do it for September. But shouldn't I just have 1 year where I did it every month?
Yeah.
Here's the current standings and all.
I mean, again, as your producer, yes.
Yeah. As a man who wants content, like we lack content during football season.
As your friend, I would completely understand tapping out at this point.
Remember the Diamondbacks 2-win lead a couple days ago? Poof. Diamondbacks 17-6, Padres 17-7. Each has 4 games left.
Look at the Cubbies.
Well, remember,
I feel like they haven't made this graphic many other months.
Remember, I had 2 season win totals this season before the season started. My number one was the Padres, who literally need to win 6 more games, and that's a winner on the over. And then the Cubbies, who now are trying to get it 2-for-2. Cubbies 15-8 this this month, but they're not going to get there, right? With 3 games left and the D-backs and Padres having 4 left, it's really a 2-team race now to the top. Diamondbacks, remember, won on the tiebreaker of fewest wins, which they would win if it ended right now in August as well. They won it in July on that tiebreaker at Circa, and they dead-heated with the Mets, who beat the Padres last night. Oh, excuse me, beat the Diamondbacks last night by 5 runs, 8-3. So that's why we're in the win column tie anyway.
I mean, a lot of this we just kind of think about when we think about betting markets and compare it to the actual sport. But, like, they need to – MLB needs to, like, in-season tournament this up. Like, just give all these guys, like, cash for, like, best monthly record
so
or
great.
Something. Like, that would be awesome.
And then best record in baseball, we have a tie at the top. Dodgers and Phillies tied at the top now. Clinging to a half-game lead over the Yankees for the best overall record in Major League Baseball, for those who bet that.
Just nutty. Like, that is...
It's a scrum.
Yeah.
It's a mosh pit at the top of baseball. We'll come back. JVT, not only on baseball, but college football. He's got plays. That's next. Numbers Game. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Quick, Kelly. What rapper did Game Recognize Game?
Oh.
It's impossible for you to answer. JT the Bigga Figga. Those in the Yay will know.
Yeah.
It's like a whole different language. It's like a whole different language. Jonathan Von Tobel joins us now, ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is our senior NBA analyst. He's also the co-host, of course, of VSiN Primetime. He does it with Tim Murray. And joins us now at MeJVT on Twitter. It's Jonathan Von Tobel, everybody. Talk a little baseball and college football with us. How you doing, man?
I'm good. You know, I'm excited. Obviously, week one is here, so we get to see all these teams. Football's back. I don't know about you, but I was texting with Adam Burke, and I'm very excited about the conclusion of this baseball season. It helps to have some skin in the game, but the season's been awesome from a storyline, a theater standpoint, so very excited for this time of year.
What are your futures bets that you are most excited about here down the stretch?
Well, the big one is, I don't know if you know this, but I was lucky enough to be invited to the All-Star Blackjack Invitational for Mike Palm and Derek Stevens, and I ended up finishing 5th in the Blackjack tournament. So I have a $7,000 free roll in the Houston Astros at 17-1 to win the World Series.
Let's
so
go.
We are, we're very much big Astros fans in this household right now. To the point where even my wife's like, hey, what the Astros do today? So very much there. And I do have them to, you know, win the division. I've got some stuff tied into the Mariners to miss the playoffs, Mets to make the playoffs. I've got some Royals futures that look much better than I made back at the end of May.
Let's go.
Very excited about the way this could end. The interesting thing is, Gil, you know, I've got this Paul Skeens 31 ticket as well to win NL Rookie of the Year, which has now become a little bit dicey too. So it's been really fun to track all of this stuff, and maybe that's why I'm so excited about the conclusion of the year, but a lot up in the air.
All right. Since you bring it up, I wasn't going to bring up Skeens versus Merrill, but we've gotten a lot of Merrill viewpoint on this show. As someone who is holding a nice Skeens ticket, how do you feel about it right at this moment?
I mean, I feel still relatively good. I mean, I just, this might be a very simplistic way to look at it. I find it very hard that the kid who started the NL All-Star game, for the NL and the All-Star game, is going to walk away with the season with nothing, right? Like, at one point, we were getting news of people selling their NL Cy Young tickets on him, right, for exorbitant amounts, and now we're going to get to a point where he's not going to get anything at all. He has been the best pitcher in baseball since he came up. Like, that is a fact. And you could talk about all of the statistics, and I said this on the show the other day. The thing I don't like about, like, I think the downside of sports betting media as a whole is, whenever we have these conversations, it just turns into stump speeches, right, for your ticket. Like, this is why he should win it.
Yep.
But I do think that the and you, I'm going to steal, I've actually stolen your phrase, and I'm giving you credit for it. we don't know anything, right? The odds market is not predictive when it comes to awards. We don't know what these voters are thinking at all. And it might be a simplistic way to look at it, but I think a kid who is an absolute star, who had his moment in the All-Star game, who has been the best pitcher in baseball, I've had it hard to believe that he's going to walk away from this season with absolutely nothing.
I like that. A little point counterpoint. Merrill right now minus 175 at DraftKings. Paul Skeens at plus 145. And yeah, we'll see. There's going to be some award voters who are going to cling to their position on Skeens, much of which is based on what you just said, that, you know, this guy, let's not forget. And you're right. There was that moment. Now, I never bought into the Cy Young thing, but you're right. There was that moment in the season. And maybe it lasted a week. Maybe it lasted 2 weeks where people are like, Cy Young. You know, so we've come far from that.
Yeah, I don't know that it should factor into the voting or the handicapping of this award, but what JVT says is correct. Like, it is just bizarre that he started the All-Star game and he's going to somehow walk away with nothing.
Yeah, stuff changes quickly. I mean, look at that. We're just talking about the Guardians of the Royals. I'm just like, think about how quickly that changed. The Guardians were up, I want to get this right, they were up 7 games. Though they've led the division since April 14th, 154 days, right? But then the Royals are 23-13 since the All-Star break when they trailed the Guardians by 7 games. So, I mean, this stuff changes so quickly in so many regards. What did you land on in baseball today, sir, if anything?
So I actually only have one bet. I bet the Orioles and Dodgers game over the total today. I bet over 8.5 at minus 110. It's still out there. Forgive me. I don't have my contacts, and that's why I'm squinting. But I think when you look at the matchup, look, we've seen Burns get knocked around quite a bit. The hard contact numbers are up there. I think that this Dodgers line is going to be able to get to him. And with Walker Buehler, look, the guy's been struggling. And I thought it was pretty telling, Gil, that even out there against the Seattle Mariners, he still looked pretty mortal, right? Every single pitcher's going out and setting career highs against the Seattle Mariners in terms of strikeouts and attempts. I mean, his own teammate Gavin Stone went out there, struck out 10 against him last week. Buehler looks pretty mortal against him too. So I think you're going to be able to get some action here. I know the market's moving in that direction. We're starting to get the juice to the over, but I went over 8.5 in this one tonight. That was the only bet that I had in baseball.
All right, let's go to college football. Speaking of stuff that nobody knows really what's happening with transfer portals, as witnessed by week zero results and line movement. I like what you did here. By the way, VSiN.com, so many different sports represented, every sport in the betting landscape represented at VSiN.com. JVT happened to write about college football. You stuck to your Mountain West wheelhouse. I like this approach.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, right? I even think I referenced it in the article. I don't think anybody knows anything, right? The market got its face kicked in over the weekend, and the market generally is a pretty sound way to look at it when you're talking about those who shape it. But I do know that I follow the Mountain West. I used to cover the Mountain West. I wrote about the Mountain West for our guide. So why not just stick in the realm of what I think I know? So every single bet that I've made thus far this weekend, outside of one, I did jump on the number in the Charlotte James Madison game when, I don't know if you saw Biff Poggi in his sleeveless shirt come out and say, like, yeah, half our guys are hurt. So I don't know what's going to happen this weekend. But for this, yeah, that's what I decided to do. And I think out of all of the games that I bet from a Mountain West perspective, the one that I do like the most, I would say, is Wyoming on the road against Arizona State. The Cowboys are a team that I'm really high on. I bet them at 14-1 to win the Mountain West Conference. They did lose Harrison Whaley, the guy who is expected to be their starting running back, but they have their top three rushers back from last year, so you still get some continuity there. 4 starters back along this offensive line. And remember, this is a team that won 9 games last year, Gil, and surprised many people, including Texas Tech, who went out there to Laramie and ended up losing that game. And you get Jay Sauvel, who takes over a head coach. It is a change because Craig Bull had been there for a while, but Sauvel had been the defense coordinator for the last 3 years, and he gets 6-7 guys back on his defense. So I think this team is being pretty undervalued. And in fact, I think the Mountain West as a whole is kind of being undervalued for the most part. I mean, over the weekend, they went 2-1 against the spread. Hawaii, the big favorite, was the lone disappointment. And you can see some other signs of that, especially when you look at Oregon State and Washington State and the way that their schedules are, coupled with their win totals and the fact that there's this blind belief that those two teams, because of their schedule, are just going to win 7.5-8 games. And I don't believe that because they're playing mostly Mountain West squads. So I'm kind of coming in thinking the Mountain West is a little undervalued. So I went Wyoming plus 6.5 in this spot against Arizona State. I also think a small play on the money line is worth it. I think this is much closer to about 3.5-4. So that's my top of the three that I bet. If I'm ranking them, I really like Wyoming in this spot this weekend.
All right, we'll send people to the website. JVT's also got thoughts on Colorado State at Texas. He's also got thoughts on UNLV at Houston. Other Mountain West teams, obviously, in that article, Colorado State and UNLV. We have a few minutes. We weren't going to talk NFL, but I am curious, before the season starts, to get your final thoughts, the Jonathan Von Tobel sort of perspective on what is a opinion that you have headed into the season that you feel is based on just conventional wisdom, is more of an outlying one. And what is the, conversely, what's the one that you're hearing, the opinion that you're hearing, widespread, that you just cannot get behind?
So I think for that last one, it's not that I can't get behind it because I kind of understand it, but I do think the Houston Texans come into the season very, very overvalued, right? I mean, you're looking at a team that's quarterback is the second choice to win MVP. You look at their win total, their odds to win the AFC South, where I think you can throw all, it's the same thing every year, right? You can throw all four of those teams in a hat, pull one out, and I'll tell you, this is your champion. And you're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I don't think they're that far ahead of the teams in their own division, let alone, you know, the teams in the conference. So one of the teams that I kind of can't get behind in terms of where they're rated is the Houston Texans. And by the way, I think they do mirror the Green Bay Packers in the NFC, right? Like, they're both similar win totals, young quarterbacks, really making a step forward. There's a lot of expectation that they're going to be a lot better this season. And so those are two teams that I think mirror one another that I can't really get behind the hype coupled with the way that the market has priced them. I think one of the ones, I guess, that is non-conventional is I do think the Arizona Cardinals can be a playoff team. I think when you look at Kyler Murray coming back now healthy, he has Marvin Harrison Jr. I like their running back core. I think this offense is going to be one of the better offenses in the National Football League. And in an NFC West that I think does look a little bit more vulnerable at the top, right? The 49ers, I think, are not as strong as they were in past years. The Rams, especially defensively, I think have some real questions about how effective they can be both up front with Aaron Donald gone and on the back end when it comes to their secondary. I think Seattle can be very good, but I don't think Arizona's that far behind them. So when you look at the Cardinals and what they can be on offense, I think that this team is going to be a playoff team. And I think that kind of falls in the realm of a little bit unconventional. And I bet them over the win total. They were a good team last year. I thought part of the underrated part about them last year was everybody saw Gannon's like locker room speech. Remember all that weird one that he had that everybody laughed at him for? And he kind of flew under the radar as one of the better coaches in the NFL. So I think in terms of non-conventional, my love for the Arizona Cardinals, I think, is up there.
That definitely qualifies because everybody else, including myself, seems to have locked into the Seahawks as the
They're good, though.
Yeah, they're good. The de facto other wild card team, if you will. Last thing, did you bet any award in the NFL, any award market?
So I do have a couple. The one that really comes to mind immediately is I did steal. I've got a couple. So I bet Tua Tagovailoa to win MVP. Anthony I bet Jared Richardson. Goff to win MVP. And not Anthony Richardson, although I do love Anthony Richardson. And then the last one I would say, and I stole this from our former colleague, Femi Abebefe, Chop Robinson to win a Defensive Rookie of the Year for the Miami Dolphins.
Chop Robinson's 40 time would be the eighth fastest running back 40 time.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How about that little nugget from Chop? Thank you, JVT. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
At me, JVT, for Jonathan Von Topel, everybody. Will Hill's on the other side. All of his bets, baseball and beyond. That's next. Numbers Game, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, you can watch episode 4 of Circus Survivor, the quest for $9.2 million tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on VSiN. Five-part docuseries takes you inside the high-stakes world of the annual Circus Survivor contest. As we follow the contestants, they make all-or-nothing picks over the 2023 NFL season and go behind the scenes of the world's largest legal, and I mean legal, betting contest. A lot of VSiN hosts make appearances along the way to offer their advice, and you can watch episode 4 once again tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on VSiN.com and YouTube TV, as well as the live broadcast on X. Go to VSiN.com/Survivor for details or to watch previous episodes. 4 is tonight, and the conclusion 5 is tomorrow. Tonight, Kelly, a lot of the villain featured, the poker player. Whoa. Sean Perry, is that his name?
Yes.
He is featured a lot in there. A bunch of money management, monetizing stuff is in there as well. And the first appearance of Paul Howard in the docuseries in episode 4 tonight.
Where was Paul been at?
He wasn't in 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, I don't know.
Paul sets a record tonight in episode 4. Most camera time without changing his expression once.
Yeah.
So he sets a record on that today.
Oh, man. Have you seen every episode? I'm going to have to catch up. I'm already at the point where I got to catch up.
I was sent a sneak preview of each. So I saw it that I've seen it that way. Sherpan texted me last night. He's like, you were great. I was like, no, you were great. He's the breakout star.
I was gonna say, from what I've seen, it's like Dave Sherapan and everybody else.
It is Dave Sherapan and everybody else. It's his world. Episode 4 tonight, Circus Survivor, The Quest for 9.2 million, 9 p.m. Eastern. Check it out. This gentleman hosts the man. I wish I would have wagered more money on this sporting event because it won, and now I have deep regrets podcast. It's Will Hill, everybody. At Not The Will Hill, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, man?
Gilly, what's going on? I'm good. That I enjoy this bit every time. And if Paulie Howard broke the record, whose record did he break for longest time without changing expression?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. I hadn't thought it through.
I don't have a good answer for that either.
Give me, a
definitely
second.
Definitely not me, that's for sure.
No, none of us.
Hell, you'll Google it while we're talking here. Yeah. Tell me to work.
Yes, he will. That'll keep him busy. Your Yankees and your Yankees. Let's just start there because that's your wheelhouse. You love this team. They keep doing this dance with the Orioles all season long. Now they're one game up in the AL East. How does this end?
A great question, boy. With baseball, like the popularity since like when I was a kid, it's waned. And there used to be nothing more exciting than a pennant race. I feel like that's been devalued a little bit with the extra playoff teams, baseball just being less popular. But I think there's value on the Orioles at plus money. Remember, the Orioles have the tiebreaker, and there's no more tiebreaker games. Game 163, which I think is a travesty, a crime against humanity. Those games were so much fun, man. Nothing more dramatic than, hey, you play 162, you're tied, and then you play one game to settle everything. So keep that in mind. Baltimore's up 6-4. Friday night, this past Friday night, if you could have just frozen time, it looked like the Yankees were about to pull away. They had a two-game lead in the loss column, for these teams. I mean, it's basically been within one all summer. Two was a lot. It was about to be three. Baltimore was losing to Houston. And not only was Baltimore losing to Houston, it was about to be three. But you looked at the next five games, and it looked like the Yankees were about to pull away because they had Rockies and Nats for the next five. Meanwhile, Baltimore, who was down to Houston, had Houston and the Dodgers for the next five. You said, wow, this is about to be three in the loss column, and this could easily be four or five here within the next few days. Well, in that 24-hour span between Friday and Saturday, the Orioles came back and beat the Astros Friday. They were losing late again on Saturday and came back, and the Yankees dropped the game to the Rockies. So you look here, and it's one game with a month or so to play. They play three times in Yankee Stadium late September. Nobody's pulled away yet. They both have issues. Baltimore's got pitching issues. Yankees have a ton of issues outside of Judge and Soto, and what Judge does every night is just incredible. This is going to come down to the wire. I think, toss up. I would give the Orioles, just because they have the tiebreaker and you're getting plus money, I think from a betting standpoint, that's the only way I would look.
Yeah. By the way, we showed it was a two-game lead in the graphic, but it is, in fact, only one game for the Yankees. Yes. By the way, in the Central, we were talking about it earlier, the Royals have the tiebreaker over the Guardians, were the two teams to end up in a tie as well. Did you land on anything?
Let me ask you, do you hate it as much as me? Do you hate that they don't have the tiebreaker game as much as me?
Oh, those tiebreaker games were unbelievable. Right. Or just like the one-off wild card game.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a Twins Tigers game. I remember that was just unbelievable. Wasn't that Epic A's game also a wild card game? The one that was like, 13-12 or something like that. Was that a one-off?
I
believe
it might have been just like the wild card playing game.
Those were the wild card games. Right. But anything that involves one determinant game. Right. Which, I always say the best of three and the best of five is cruel, so maybe I shouldn't be a fan of a one-off, but it just adds so much drama. It really does.
Hey, you're tied after 162. It's so much more fun. It's so much more dramatic than up. We're going to go to a tiebreaker and somebody wins, somebody loses. And, the loser's going to have the net of the playoffs, but I just think those games were so much fun. There was the year in 2018, too, where there was, four playing games because there were two scenarios where the division's tied, the wild card's tied, and they had to just keep pairing teams off. I think it was Dodgers, Rockies, and Cubs, Brewers. And there was like a four-way tie, and it's just it's too bad we don't have it anymore.
Well, remember back in the day, I mean, when it was only four divisions, now we're talking about a different era. But like if you were tied at, what was that year, the Giants and the Braves, I think, were tied, 103 or something like that, and they play one game and the loser's done. Just in, that was really unbelievable. Now we've got it down to this, which is its own set of interesting quirks. Did you bet anything in baseball today?
I did bet the Pirates. I laid the minus. I think if you shop around, get dime lines. I think South Point has dime lines, -150, -155 in that range. Paul Skeens is on the mound. And Jason Weingarten, I know, is on your show later. I wonder if he has any thoughts on Paul Skeens going today. His game is even rookie of the year.
Yeah.
But I did take Skeens, and I'm looking to fade Walker Buehler going for the Dodgers. He's just not the same pitcher. It's a sad story because, 4 or 5 years ago, he was as good as anybody in the league pretty much, and he can't get swings and misses anymore. He's not the same guy. So, And Burns quietly hasn't been as dominant as you'd expect for Baltimore. So over 8.5 might be the way I'd play that. But I'll call it those two. Over 8.5 Dodgers Orioles, and I will take the Pirates on the money line. A little bit of a lighter card. I didn't see too much pop up that interests me. Did play some college football too, which starts tomorrow, man. So you're mentioning the Survivor Show, the Circus Show. If you haven't caught up on your shows, boy, you might be running out of time, because once football starts, you know, tomorrow, Saturday, you get a full card. Thursday night football is a week away. Football is here.
It's a good point. I got to watch the last episodes of the Bears Hard Knocks. Got to get through that. Not as fun as the Giants preseason.
It's a little boring. It's so correlated to the coach just basically screaming and cursing. Like when the coach, he's just Eberflus is just very kind of vanilla. He's very tame, where he's not screaming at these guys, he's not cursing them out. You're not seeing the guys get cut. It is definitely a lesser version of Hard Knocks. And I even sense that Hard Knocks bump. I think we talked about it all spring and summer. Hey, when these teams are on Hard Knocks, they get bet. There's enthusiasm for them. I haven't sensed the same with the Bears this summer.
Yeah, I have not either. But, you know, people definitely are locked into their opinions of the Bears. You mentioned college football. What did you play?
I think my favorite play is Notre Dame team total under 21.5 at Texas A&M. They just never seem to step up when they play these elite teams, these SEC-type teams, and they don't have a lot of experience on the offensive line. I think it's all freshmen. It's all sophomores. It's only like a handful of returning starts, not starters, but starts combined. And look, I don't know how much of this is true. I heard A&M's defensive line is worth $10 million to NIL. They got paid $10 million. But I guess awesome. It's possible, and they're good up it front. Is. So I just don't know that Notre Dame can block them. And you have this whole angle, which I really like. I think it's a strong angle. Elko, the coach for A&M, was a tremendous coach, a tremendous defensive coach. He coached against Riley. He coached Riley Leonard last year at Duke, and now he's coaching against them. I think when you coach a kid, you know his strengths, you know his weaknesses. I can always remember remember when Drew Bledsoe got traded from the Patriots to the Bills, and he would go into Foxborough. Man, he just didn't have a chance. I always think back to, like, you have a defensive coach, and he knows the quarterback. He coached the quarterback, and it's always tough on the quarterback because they can really hone in on the weaknesses. So Notre Dame team total under, and I really think North Dakota State is live against Colorado. I don't think that team is disciplined. I think North Dakota State is good in the trenches. You always worry about the speed, the athleticism mismatch, but I really think North Dakota State getting the 9.5 to 10, and boy, I do give them a chance to win the game straight up too.
By the way, that NIL comment, I think, like, I'm just trying to think as you're speaking of all the things, you know, we come in here every day. Yeah. We talk about sports. We talk about betting. Of all the things throughout sports that we know the least about truly collectively, it's how much money is being thrown around. We really kind of get it now, but I don't think we really get it. You know, it is $10 million just for the defensive line kind of thing. That's incredible.
It really is. It's such a change. And you come across these articles or podcasts and you just hear like a throwaway comment, a throwaway line. Oh, they paid this defensive lineman $1 million. He may or may not play. It's like, wait, this is college football. You're paying, you know, a reserve defensive lineman 7 figures. Just insane. It really is.
Yeah. My buddy's son plays at Alabama basketball. And he was like, yeah, check out his podcast. I'm like, his podcast? It's a video podcast. He goes, yeah, it's part of his NIL deal. I was like, part? He goes, yeah, he's got a few different things happening. It's like, and you have no idea. You have no idea.
Nice life.
It is a nice life. It's a whole different world. That's the thing we know least about. Misinformation is a different category. That number one would be Iga's not good on hard courts. Clearly. I think we all understand that. Thank you very much, Will Hill, everybody. At Not The Will Hill. By the way, first Megapod Tuesday next week. Usually we do them Thursdays. Tuesday. You going to be free?
I'll be there.
Steve Fezzik is our guest, along with Todd Wishnev. The first week one NFL Megapod. At Not The Will Hill, Shoulda Bet More is the name of his podcast. We will come back. A lot of wide receiver stuff bantied about, including OBJ, Ja'Marr Chase. That's next.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
8 days away from the NFL season, we got our updated NFL betting guide in full effect mode with post preseason updates for every team, new insights on players to watch, week one betting systems, and of course, more best bets. Grab our football season special, get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for just $175. That's over 5 months of daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, top rated betting systems, 24/7 video analysis, special edition guides, time ticking, though. With the NFL season about to start, you need to act now to get the most out of every game. Lock in your VSiN Pro access through football season for only $175, or start a monthly subscription for just $19 and see how VSiN Pro can make you a better better. Sign up now, VSiN.com/subscribe. I will spell it for you, VSIN.com/subscribe. I only spelled the VSiN part, not the rest of it. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. A lot of wide receiver news. Speaking of the NFL, Kelly, you see this?
It's been a lot all summer, but yeah, oh man, stuff finally getting finalized.
Oh, by the way, you were asking me off air. You were calling me on the Chop Robinson comment that I made. You were like, wait, eighth fastest running back he would have been? Let me clarify. Chop Robinson ran a 4.48 40 at the combine. He would have been the eighth fastest running back of 40 times at the combine.
I was assuming it was that, but I wanted to clarify because I don't know that we're getting, like, does anybody ever see, like, updated, like, you know, is Derrick Henry running, is he running a 40 every offseason and someone's, like, actually tweeting out that that number? I've never seen that ever.
Like, it's a very good point.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the, I don't think they do that stuff after the combine, like, ever again.
My kid Owen, season-ending IR.
Oh, man.
I have no words. I have no words.
That is tough. I also feel like that was, man, like the injury. I feel like there was a lot of guys yesterday put on like the 4 week IR, right? Or, you know, where they can come back later in the season.
I don't know why they didn't put him on that. They'll be back in 6 weeks.
It's got to be that bad.
As we talk Ravens depth chart at running back. But speaking of wide receivers, mentioned Chop, his teammate, OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., who, by the way, again, special numbers investigation reveals that he is a Miami Dolphin, you should know. And for those who are like, well, OBJ, I mean, they've got ridiculous speed already at wide receiver with Reakin, with Waddle. What about OBJ? Well, remember when we were going through the Dolphins preview, how we mentioned, and this is courtesy of FTN Sports, OBJ last year in the NFL ranked 20th in yards per route. Now, what does that mean? 20th in yards per route. Typically seen as the stickiest metric in determining how good a wide receiver really is. So he's actually super efficient, and he is now, the word from the Dolphins is OBJ will begin the season on the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list, meaning he'll miss at least the first four games. Since signing with the Dolphins in March, he has not practiced because of an undisclosed injury. So there's that. Speaking of wideouts who, practice.
I don't like that one's still weird because they kind of signed him knowing he was banged up, and then like you're starting the season. Yeah. I mean, you're going special numbers game investigation now. Wait till week five of the NFL season. We're all like, hey, Odell Beckham Jr. is going to play a game for the Dolphins. Remember that?
Yeah. We do the investigations for the casual who probably missed that he played for the Dolphins. CeeDee Lamb, of course, signed with the Cowboys. Famously, he missed the entire preseason. He's like, whatever, I'll just show up when I, 13 days before the season, he shows up. How about Ja'Marr Chase? He is expected to play in the team season opener, meaning the Bengals season opener. Coach Zach Taylor said Tuesday, after missing all of training camp, Chase participated in the team's two light practices this week and continue to be involved as the team ramps up for its first game against the New England Patriots. Bengals, the biggest favorite on the board. That's got to be the number one survivor pick, as we've said.
Yeah.
Gots to be.
I think so.
Gots to be.
That's, I don't know. Like, his is maybe the most fascinating to me because I'm like, what does he have, 2 years left on his contract? Like, it sure sounds like people are expecting, like, sounds like that negotiation is more about, like, he wants, more than Justin Jefferson. I don't think we're going to get there, at least at this point.
But, like, I mean, I'm sure there's some football hardos that will disagree with me here, but, like, I don't expect either CeeDee Lamb or Ja'Marr Chase to miss a beat. Like, maybe the first game they'll be off a little bit, but after that, they'll be fine.
So this, what's always tricky with these, and I think especially with, like, and we've seen this in the past few years, but especially the skill position guys, it's, I agree with you, Gil, except for they haven't been getting any reps, and we see these little soft tissue injuries happen.
Yeah, no, that part's different. You're right.
You're like, I agree with you. I don't expect either. I expect both of them to be dominant wide receivers until one of them pulls up with a hammy, running around.
Or worse.
Yeah, or worse.
Yeah. And this one might have gone under the radar. Speaking of wide receivers, Tim Patrick, who we talked about formerly of the Broncos.
Fascinating.
Expected to sign with the Lions.
Practice squad, I believe.
Practice squad, with the idea, though, that he'll work his way up until the active roster.
Yeah, I mean, that was when I was expecting him to be a kind of, you know, pretty significant contributor for Denver this year. But it's, what was it, back-to-back seasons of injuries? Like, it is, yeah, I guess you just don't know what you're getting with a guy like that at this point.
So you got Amon-Ra, St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Khalif Raymond, and now you got lurking Tim Patrick.
Yeah. I mean, throw LaPorta and Gibbs, and yeah, it's a scary offense right there.
You see it.
I do not think we have seen close to the best of Jahmyr Gibbs yet in the NFL either.
Did you see how I cleverly avoided calling it the wide receiver room?
good job.
Thanks very much. That was the whole point of that entire thing, was me avoiding that.
I was kind of wondering why.
Oh, one more thing. The Brownies, just talking about like weird roster quirks.
Yep.
The Browns kept four quarterbacks.
Yep.
So you got your Deshaun Watson, you got your Jameis, then you got your DTR and your Tyler Huntley.
So what was the one I was hearing yesterday on this is, I guess that there have been, like, I love the little like poker games that go on in the NFL like this, where I guess there are multiple teams interested in Tyler Huntley who have just been waiting for him to get cut.
Yeah.
And the Browns are like, no, like, you got to trade it, like, give us a seventh rounder or something. Like, give us something. We're not going to cut him. Like, they're trying to call everybody's bluff about releasing him. So
anyway, not to go on roster moves tangent or anything here. You wanted to bring this up back to, can we go back to tennis for a second? Mm-hmm. Here? So we got Sia coming up to talk golf. So I want to just squeeze in this tennis thing. With all that we saw in round one, was there anything futures wise that caught my eye or anything like that? Not different from the preflop. All my preflops are there. Mukova looked great in round one. I have her in Q2. Kalinskaya looked good in round one. I have her in Q2. Bedosa looked great in Q3. By the way, Paula Bedosa today going up against Taylor Townsend. This is actually a pretty good barometer for Bedosa. I know a lot of people are like, oh, Taylor Townsend. Taylor Townsend's hard court numbers are actually spectacular. So if Bedosa can roll her off the court, that's also just another sign that Bedosa is on her way here. Hopefully to win Q3, if not beyond, for others who have her beyond that. But Townsend should not be overlooked. That's going to be an interesting match between Bedosa and the American Taylor Townsend.
I always think from a futures perspective, because we don't talk about it as much. Like, you always hit the quarters before it starts.
Yes.
Are there ever updated quarter prices that you jump in, like, after you see a match or two?
Oh, if one of my folks got knocked out or something like that, I've done it before.
Okay.
Yeah. But here, no. I mean, I stick with, nothing has happened in the first round that causes me any, like, massive concern. The biggest upset that happened yesterday, on either the men's or women's side, is our girl Danielle freaking Collins.
Yeah.
Got bounced by Carolyn Dolahide, fellow American. This has been a tough year in tennis in terms of like retirements, because Danielle, she's still playing doubles, but like, this is her last year. That was her last U.S. Open. Obviously, the biggest name in tennis that is retiring this year is Andy Murray on the men's side. But there's a lot of players. Shelby Rogers, that was her last U.S. Open appearance when Pegula took her out. By the way, Jessie's going to be fine. She won a match. Don't worry.
Thank God.
Every time she plays, she loses. I text Kelly. Is she going to be okay if she loses? I love that you say that. So no change. The bottom line is no change on the futures prices, because everybody's still intact.
Tsitsipas lost yesterday. I don't really know how high.
He never plays well at the U.S. Open. Never plays well. Kokkinakis never plays well. So Kokkinakis acted like he won the tournament when he won that match yesterday.
Yeah, I caught that too. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I thought the same thing.
Someone, like, forgive me, someone tweeted me yesterday. He's like, boy, he's a big Bedosa fan. He's like, I hope Tsitsipas doesn't bring her down with his depression since he lost. Boyfriend, girlfriend kind of thing.
Mm.
You know? So yeah, so no change whatsoever. I will just say, everybody looked, not everybody, but again, Sinner, Alcaraz, Iga, they all look kind of wobbly in round one, but they all should, you know, crescendo upwards.
Any thoughts on Novak? I mean, over at DraftKings, has jumped Alcaraz at the top of the board.
I mean, listen, the fact that he won that gold medal at the Olympics was in that final match against Carlitos was just unbelievably, that's a match of the year.
Yeah.
And that was that was the one thing he had never had. And this was his last chance to get it, and he got it. Now, this is all gravy. So he can play loose. He's already won 24 of these. He's in a tie with Margaret Court for the most slams. He doesn't even have to worry about the men at this point. So for him, playing completely loose. I think it's Djokovic and Alcaraz. I'm not buying into the Sinner thing in the finals. Yeah. We'll come back. Sia Najat on the Tour Championship, how he's betting the 72-hole version of this, and also the FedEx Cup with the staggered leaderboard, if you will. That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.